Well, hey again, everyone. I'm Will Richardson, and I want to welcome you back to Season 1 of the 2017 Modern Learners Podcast, where this year we're searching around the world for schools and districts that are raising the bar when it comes to thinking about relevant, sustainable change for their students. In this episode, I talk with Refranz Davis, the Executive Director of Professional and Digital Learning for the Lufkin, Texas School District. Despite a number of challenges in her district, Refranz is spearheading efforts to create innovative opportunities for makerspaces, integrated computational thinking, and personal professional learning. We talk about what student-centered learning really is, the role of passion in learning, the requirements of culture to make sustainable change happen, and the layers of barriers that make change difficult. I hope you enjoy it. And remember, if you want to learn more about this podcast series, about our white papers, masterclasses, and about our new 8-week course on modern leadership that we're launching this March, check out our private Modern Learners Facebook group, or head on over to modernlearners.com, where you can sign up for our amazingly informative weekly newsletter that tracks all the opportunities and challenges of learning today. But for now, I hope you enjoy my conversation with Refranz Davis. Thanks for listening. Refranz, I want to start with a question that I've been beginning with in all of these interviews, and that is, what is the question that is driving your work right now in your district? What's the kind of burning question that is motivating you in the way you think about learning, the way you think about how that happens in classrooms with teachers and all that?
You know, I think for me, it sounds very cliche, but it's why not us? Why not? And just let me kind of go into what that means and why I kind of choose that question. Is because oftentimes we tend to look at, you know, different schools or different learning environments that are, you know, opening up to be a lot more student-centered, a lot more creative ways of thinking. And oftentimes we tend to think we can't do that. We don't have this. We don't have that. We still lack training. We still lack certain types of accesses. But for me, it's about what do we have and why can't we just question how we do things a little bit differently? Why couldn't we do that? And that, I think that probably drives me more than anything.
What are the things that you're questioning then in terms of doing things differently? I mean, what does change look like for you and your district?
You know, I wish I could say that it was pretty all the way around, and it isn't. We're just
you're not alone in that, by the way.
No. And what's funny is people will have you believe the opposite of that. They'll right. have you believe everybody is doing inquiry in every single class all day and tests don't run what we do. But that is so far from the truth.
Right.
And that's a reality people don't like to talk about. But for me, it is those moments whether teachers are creating a communication access to their students that they didn't have before, or changing an assignment instead of giving every kid the exact same thing to do, saying, here is what you need to learn. Now create that thing, and then we will evaluate what you've learned based on that. And that happens, you know, more times than I thought, but it's happening more and more the more teachers are opening up and the more that they are seeing the possibilities from maybe model classrooms or model teachers across the district.
Now, I know you're a big advocate for student-centered learning, and I'm a real stickler for definition of terms. So what does that term mean to you?
You know, I think the best way that I can explain it is that it's not that the teacher is the one with the, you know, the 90-minute lecture. And sometimes a lecture is okay. Let me just say that there are certain times in certain learnings when you need to listen. We all are accustomed to kind of doing that. But at the same time, it is when the teacher gets to step aside and the kids are researching. They are utilizing each other. They are bringing in learning the things that they have learned or applied from outside of the classroom. It's when kids really get to tackle a topic in a way that makes sense to them. That to me is a lot more student-centered, not, you know, teacher-driven, not a checklist of things, maybe a question, but who knows what the kids will dig and what they'll learn just based on a question.
I think one of the things that as I hear people talk about student-centered and self-directed and those types of terms, one of the things that's interesting to me is that there seems to be this continuum as to how much agency that really means for kids. So in some cases, when people say that, it's pretty much kids have choice of getting to our outcomes, and we're just kind of giving them, you know, a little bit more leeway in the path that they take to get there, which isn't a bad thing, but I mean, that's just one way people define it. And other people on the other end of the spectrum kind of say, well, it really is about letting kids determine what to learn, how they learn it, when they learn it, how they apply it. So there seems to be a lot more kind of empowerment that's given to kids. So I'm curious as to where philosophically you fall on that spectrum, and then maybe realistically where you can fall on that spectrum in your school district.
Philosophically, I strongly believe that, you know, what is that saying that you shouldn't give kids, you know, questions that they, you shouldn't have to lecture things or tell them things that they can look up for themselves. Philosophically, I think that, you know, the kids, when we talk about, this is what you need to learn by the end of a unit. And maybe there are some guidelines to that, but at the same time, kids get to ask questions and make connections that a teacher that I didn't have to think about, that they are making those connections. Case in point, I had a teacher who just gave an assignment. The kids were researching. It was in science. I think it was like convection, radiation. It was another topic the kids were researching. But she didn't go into definition about what any of these topics were. She specifically said, this is what we need to learn about. You're going to get to build some background information first and then talk about what you've learned or what you found based on it. And the kids got to do that research. They got to also go create or apply it and then come in and talk about it. So some kids use Minecraft to build machines. Some kids wrote poems. They wrote songs. It was just kind of interesting, their take on the topic when they came in. And that was before the teacher got up with a PowerPoint to say, these are the things you needed to learn. It actually never got to that point because of the connections that the kids made. Ideally, I wish that could be done for every lesson in every class all the time, especially coming from a math background. I would love to see more of that. But philosophically, I mean, well, that's, I guess, my philosophically, ideally, that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen all the time, but it should happen.
So can it happen?
It can. Here's what's keeping that from happening. What's keeping that from happening are the foundations of the way a school should run. And kind of now being on this administrative side, I see where it's coming from. It is coming from a state saying we need to meet certain marks. The pressures of the I hate to call it the people in power, but that's the way of the beast. I guess the pressure of those in an administrative position needing to meet those terms, and that same pressure filters down to teachers. And the reality is the teachers can go to training and they can read books and they can get on Twitter and they can see, oh my gosh, I can change my classroom in all these ways. But if your leadership isn't there and if your leadership isn't on board with knowing that we don't have to allow a state or a score to dictate who we are as a school, and look at what learning can be, then those teachers have a lot more freedom to think differently and think out of the box in order to give students more of those experiences, because they're not pretty at the beginning. They're not going to show up on a district test at the beginning, but they will show up eventually as the kids continue to dig more, collaborate more, and build more.
So that sounds a lot like culture, right? I mean, it
sounds,
yeah. So how do you as a leader attempt to change that culture? Because, you know, there are people, and I'm sure you know many of them, who in their leadership roles are able to say to teachers in their schools, look, you know we have to get to these outcomes. They are very specific and they are time, you know, we've had to do this for a long, long time. But we don't necessarily have to get to those outcomes in the traditional path. And they're trying to find, you know, different ways to get there and build culture around that. So how do you kind of think about that? And how do you attack that problem of culture, or not problem, but how do you shift that culture around that?
You know, I'm very fortunate for me that I am a part of a pretty strong team that is actually looking to change that. A lot of what we did in year one, which was last year, is we just kind of went into classrooms and help teachers think differently or do a lesson differently. And we shared that. And then there was some pushback. I'm not going to say that there wasn't. There were, you know, people that were kind of, oh, yeah, y'all are doing the fun stuff. Now we need to learn. And that was probably some of the most unnerving time when you're encountering that type of feedback. But I kind of believe in, you know, ignore that and just keep pushing, keep pushing, keep pushing. And eventually those people came around and they were like, all right, we saw what you did in these few classrooms. How can we spread that? How can we bring this thinking to other classrooms? My superintendent is incredibly passionate about the, you know, some of these same ideals on school change and thinking and culture. And we did a book study. We read Building School 2.0 as a leadership team. We came back, we discussed it. We're trying to embed that more, that thinking more and more in our schools. But I think that it comes from, you have to, number one, you have to keep pushing for change regardless. Number two, you have to be very real about where you are, and you have to proactively do things as a leadership team to help spread that, those ideas, or to help bridge that communication so that others can come on board. And, you know, we would not be where we are without taking those steps and doing that.
How important do you think it is to have a vision for what that looks like at the end? I mean, obviously you can make changes, and many of them are going to be incremental simply because of the realities, and it's going to be challenging and probably time consuming. But do you guys have a vision for what you want it to look like if you get there? You know, whether that takes 1 year, 5 years, 10 years?
Yeah, that's why we have committees to come and talk about that.
We
actively look at it, and we actively pursue it. I mean, we have our strategic plan, which we just changed. I had the fun task of expanding like 3 or 4 areas that we needed to expand upon because it just wasn't in the discussion, and now it is. And for me, I think that's really important. It can't just be one person. If it were only me saying, hey, we need to not do worksheets every day, that wouldn't do anything. But it needed to be a community of teachers. You need to have student voice, which we do. You need to have your, of course, your leadership teams on board, and you need to have your community as a part of it.
Now, I know that passion is another word that you use a lot, and that you use in the context of student learning and also teacher learning. So how does passion play? I'm really interested in teachers as learners. So how does passion play a role in teachers as learners, first of all? And then how does that kind of funnel down into classrooms as well?
You know, I've had the incredible experience of being an aunt to a pretty incredible, passionate kid who just surprises us every day with the things his little brain creates. And I think that that particular idea of what do you want to learn and what walls will you break down to learn it has really inspired me in my own journey. And so coming into this and working with teachers, I've realized just for myself, when I was really invested in an idea, I put my heart, soul, and gut into it, much like my nephew. But what ideas were our teachers passionate about? One of the things that we did this year is last year we started our, what we called our teacher ambassador group. There were teachers who were kind of thinking that, hey, I want to, whether it's using technology or it is rethinking learning in my classroom, I want to be a part of this change in our district. And we've asked them, what are you passionate about, and what could you create that could have a direct impact on our teachers and students if you were to create your own project? So that's one thing that we're doing, is helping those teachers to put their projects into action. And I think that you need to do that. It helps teachers to create the change that they want to see. It also helps to helps them to see, just from that lens of you being the architect of this change, what this looks like, so that it can filter from you as a teacher to what that looks like for your students.
And how important do you think it is to share that work, to make that work
Absolutely.
Transparent? Yeah, so how do you do that?
We actually have an innovation night where we share from across this district. And so for this year, we have several different things happening. We have all of our schools representing with outstanding projects that students have created in class or units that kids have done. We have students that are in our grades 3 through 5 Young Scholars program that are doing advanced study with technology and art. And then we also will have our teacher ambassadors with the projects that they've created, showcasing those projects, and that's open to our entire community.
Do you communicate that stuff in other ways other than kind of face-to-face presentation as well?
We will. So remember, we're just at the beginning stages of this.
Right.
And phase one for us was our district website. It's kind of a joke right now,
mm-hmm.
but we're working with EduBlogs, Campus Press to build our new school website, which will integrate blogs for every teacher and student into it.
Wow.
And then once we finished this, so we're still working out the design kinks of what the new page looks like. I actually have a meeting with Campus Press today. But we will have we actually have two blogs, one for our teacher projects, and then one, a student voice blog, where we'll showcase anything that students are passionate about, where they can submit and showcase, and we'll showcase whether it be student work from the classroom, passion projects they do outside of school, poems that they write, book reviews that they just want to talk about, or whatever. We're also creating a platform for our students in that way, too.
So that's a culture shift too, right? I mean, that's about more transparency and more sharing.
Yeah.
So how do you nurture that?
It's really funny. So the first thing that we did is every month our superintendent actually has a meeting with our student leadership team. So our student leadership team are comprised of our high school students and all of the academic special teams and the elective leaders of student organizations. And I actually went and met with her and our student leadership team several times last year to talk about it. And they were, number one, completely on board. Number two, they're the ones that are going to be 90% of the time running it. So that was another part of it, is you don't do something like this without involving the students to see if this is something that they would want to do. But more importantly, you get them involved to the point that they are actually the kind of curators of it.
So I'm wondering a little bit about, I mean, you guys, tell me a little bit about your plan and how many, you know, what the kind of term is in terms of your vision, how long you think it's going to take to get to where you want to get to, and how you came up with that plan.
So I do again have to credit my superintendent. I love her. So the first thing that that she did is, we all have a goal, like a yearly goals that we continue to communicate on throughout the year, our entire executive leadership team. So we come up with these harebrained ideas and we say, these are the things that we want to put in place and this is what it takes. Here's where we are. Here's how long it goes. I would say about 75% of what I put down last year had to be shifted into year two, because I have pretty big goals that that couldn't be just done in 1 year. But I would say I would say by year three, into year three, we should be where we need to be. I mean, we had a lot of problems coming in. Our teachers were using tools in the classroom that were completely outdated. I'm talking about 5 to 6 year old computers, some of which they weren't working that well. Our Wi-Fi infrastructure was not great. I'd work directly with our IT director, and we're getting that to where it needs to be. But part of that also phase was upgrading our teacher computers. We just did that. I mean, we gave them all laptops for the first time. Like they didn't have to turn on their computer, go down the hall, get coffee, go to the bathroom, go get breakfast and come back, wait 10 minutes for their computer to start. It just worked. So that was a part of it, is connecting them to information. They didn't have access to it and we had to do that. Between that, connecting them to information, connecting them to each other. Now we're working on connecting them to the outside. While at the same time, I realize that as you wait on growth or you wait on change, oftentimes the student initiatives usually take a back burner because you're building up the teachers. I also kind of believe, why do we need to do that? Why can't we start with our students too? So at the same time, we're also working directly with students so that we're making sure to fill some gaps for our students while we bring our district and our teachers to where they need to be.
So basically a lot of capacity building going on.
Yep.
Right now. Yeah,
absolutely.
So what do you think are some of the dispositions that leaders of change need to have? What are the most important kind of qualities that people who are devoted to or really passionate about change, what do they need to have in their makeup?
Number one, patience. Oh, patience, patience, patience. The second thing is you need to be real with yourself and reflect. You need to know when you're going in the wrong direction. You need to know when you're not listening to the right people so that you can fix that. I'm not perfect, and I didn't get this right at the beginning, and there are certain things that I still don't get right. But the one thing that I do is I recognize when it's not right. I keep people around me that are just as honest and really work on trying to do that. I don't feel like I need to have all the answers, and I think that if you're in this position, you need to be a person that realizes you don't have all the answers, even if you have a plan. There's no such thing as a one-person plan that creates a big of a change as we would like to see. And that's another part that's important as well.
I'm wondering too, then, in terms of communicating about change, how do leaders need to approach changing that story of education? Because really, that's what you're trying to do. And teachers, students, parents, community members are all invested in a fairly traditional story. So, I mean, talk a little bit about that. I mean, how does leadership best kind of attack that issue as well?
You need to have other leaders on board with you. And what I mean is, again, if it were just me that said, hey, we need to maybe not have, a folder with 50 pieces of paper in it for every meeting. We need to think about our use of time and space differently from a leadership standpoint. And knowing those conversations can also go into schools. Our superintendent, our other leadership staff, we kind of, I guess, developed that mindset within ourselves. I went and did a training with my assistant superintendent and with my superintendent just on basic things that they could do that could have an impact on the principals that we work with. That was important too. So I think that when you, and I guess hopefully I'm answering your question. Can you repeat it again? I kind of want to make sure I get that.
Well, I'm just curious because the story is changing, right? And a lot of people kind of struggle with that narrative shifting because it doesn't reflect what they experienced when they were in school. So I guess you were talking about building capacity of your
Yeah.
teachers. How do you build capacity of community to also embrace that change?
There we go. That's where I was going with it. Sometimes I get started and carried away and just continue on with it. And so
That's
you
all
have to
right.
forgive me on that. But yeah, but what I was saying was that we know that we needed I school shouldn't look like the way it looked like when I was in school. But let's be real, 90, 80% of the time or up, it does. So, again, as I was talking about building the capacity and leadership, we had to start there. That's for us where it started. And I'm always shocked to see of places that don't do that. I came from a school district that didn't do that. We wanted to see, to bring in all the buzzwords of education into the classroom. But where when your leadership will come together, it's the same thing. The norms of no technology, no talking to other people. The everyone's writing notes in the exact same way. There's not really any type of collaboration. Well, we had to bring that into our leadership learning spaces. And what we saw was, without even trying, that filtered into our teacher learning spaces. If we didn't do that, then we wouldn't. I guess the conversations that shifted from there, whether it was starting our ambassador program or, all of the, other advanced programs that we started to create, we would not have gotten as far as we did had we not done that. The principals needed to have ownership of what change looked like. Our school board needed to have ownership of what does it look like when I'm collaborating on something and I'm not emailing a document to five people and it changes every time it emails.
Right.
We needed to build those ideals into spaces beyond our classroom. And I think you have to really sit down with your community, with your teams, and work out a plan or figure out how you're going to do that. I mean, ours was done that way by design, and I would not have done it any other way.
Right. So I'm wondering how do you build your own capacity, your personal capacity? I mean, obviously you have a pretty rich connection into social media. You have a presence online. You've been working with technology, but obviously the world is changing pretty quickly. So how do you keep up?
Honestly, I came in this way. I came from a pretty incredible pre-service teaching program. And as a part of that program, I was in a federally funded grant program called the Teacher Quality Grant. And we were paired with mentor teachers from my pre-service days. I was working with teachers who had a great deal more seniority in the classroom. We were collaborating on lessons. We were actually building, interactive content for math. Like, we were also paid, it was paid for us to attend conferences, and we were also encouraged to present at conferences and to work with and learn from others. I was doing that since before I ever stepped foot into the classroom as a teacher. So I don't know a world where I'm not connecting, where I'm not reading books, where I'm not doing research, participating in action research, learning, just kind of taking on this quiet and learning from others. But I think that the other part is you also have to extend beyond kind of where your domain is. It would be easy for me to only learn about the technology tools, but I can't do that. I have to learn about the big picture of education. So, being on Twitter is one thing, but connecting to people and reading from reading what people write that speaks beyond just the tools themselves, but speak to a culture shift or belief shift. I had to do that, and I do that consistently.
Now, I know you're also, really interested in diversity in terms of how that looks in schools and how that looks in terms of ideas. And I think that the whole diversity question has become pretty interesting over the last year or so, especially here in the United States. How do you, just specifically with in your online world, in your kind of social media world online, how do you build diversity in those conversations and in those interactions? Because I think that that's something that a lot of people struggle with, number one, and number two, leads us to some pretty difficult realities, as again, I think have been evidenced lately. So give us some advice on how do we keep diversity in the mix, not just in terms of race and gender and those types of things, but certainly in terms of opinions and worldview and all that kind of stuff.
I try to keep around me, when I say around me, specifically online, my online around me, I like to keep people that come from different views, point of views, spaces at all times. I've always been probably vocal, more vocal than I should be in a lot of cases, I'm sure. I'm sure someone has that opinion. But I think that the conversation of diversity, I think people were always on the cusp of talking about it, but never really having that space to talk about it. But I kind of just take from my grandmother on calling a spade a spade. So the minute you go into a space and you say, wait a minute, who's not in this room and should be? That's when either people will join in because it's a conversation they were already thinking about, or people are going to get really uncomfortable. And you know what? They need to get really uncomfortable. So I connect with people like Jose Wilson, Sabrina Stevens, and the entire Educolor community, and have really, I guess, taken the inspiration from people who do this work consistently to what does this look like in my learning space? What should this look like in all of our learning spaces? And being honest, I created a community here in our district of learners that was not as diverse. And I talked about it. And I said, wait a minute, I kind of wrote a small snippet of a book about this, but then I didn't do it right in my own school district. Here is where I made those mistakes, and here's how we fix it. So I think you have to definitely keep people around you that are committed to the cause. But at the same time, I'm not afraid of people being uncomfortable. I don't care. You need to be uncomfortable.
And that must be an important kind of experience that you want kids to have as well, or a disposition at least. And so I wonder, how do you bring that into classrooms, and how do you think technology can amplify that or serve that purpose?
Oh, yeah. So I'm, again, fortunate to have always been in pretty diverse school districts. And what I found with the kids are already doing it to a point. They're friend groups. So they're kind of points of who they connect with are pretty wide open. until you get to advanced academic classes, those are predominantly, you know, filled with mostly white students. So from an adult standpoint, when you have to look at who's in those classes and how are we deciding who gets into those classes, or why aren't other students taking those classes? So that's one thing. Like, we can help facilitate more of that student-to-student interaction and communication if we do it right from the jump. The other part of that is I work with a lot of teachers in schools that, you know, the diversity is just not there. So that's where they have to do the, you know, Skype in the classroom or Google Hangouts with other classes to learn about, not to fix. Oftentimes you see the rich affluent school adopting a school in Africa, and then it becomes a big deal and they're sharing how we've connected with these students who are not like us. And that's all fine and good. But at the same time, maybe you shouldn't take the lens of, I'm going to fix this thing for this school that is much less fortunate to. I want to connect with this school and learn with and from them. And I think that we need to do more of that, which is why we do encourage our classrooms to connect and learn from and learn with, and not just connect to fix.
And I mean, obviously, as someone who's is vested in technology in a learning context, I'm sure you look into the future and wonder what the role of technology is going to be and how it's going to change how we learn. Do you have any thoughts on that? Any predictions or sense of what the next 5, 10, 15 years are going to look like?
I actually worry a little bit, and only because I want to make sure that we continue to have conversations about math and science in particular, and access and opportunity in particular. There's a lot of conversations that have happened over the last year with recognizing that we needed to make sure that our poorest of communities had access, our poorest of communities had connected to the coursework, the plans, the learning that they needed. And I hope that regardless of what is happening with us on a national political landscape, that we have within us the knowledge that we need to do this work and that it continues. So, you know, we're not going anywhere. We're still here. And as long as we're still here and committed to this local change, then we can still continue to push for closing these gaps that exist. But the minute we give that up, and the minute we forget our part, that's the part that scares me.
Do you see technology for learning as more of an opportunity or a challenge for schools?
I think it's a mix of both. My school district is definitely a challenge, and a challenge in the sense of we don't have device access for all of our students. We have student computers. Our kids go home. Some of them have Wi-Fi, some of them don't. A lot of times in this conversation, you hear about all the schools that have done it, the Wi-Fi buses, the one-to-ones, and, you know, you hear about those schools that have the technology and the now what. We're still at the part of getting the technology piece in order. But there are a lot more schools like mine that we don't hear from or hear about. And we can't forget that this still exists. So as we talk about funding and how we make that happen, I hope that we keep schools like mine still in the conversation, because we're still working on getting there.
And if you had it, what would be the greatest opportunities, do you think?
Our students understanding that the world is bigger than the zip code they live in. And I mean, I say that with the deepest sense of sincerity. We have kids that have never been outside of Lufkin, Texas, that have never stepped foot or connected to anyone outside of Lufkin, Texas. That think that the answers that they need are what are in the textbooks that we pay for, not realizing that there's a lot more to those stories that are not in those textbooks. So I think that information gap is the one that I want to close more than anything, not just for our students, but also their parents and the community at large.
And I guess just we can finish up with this, but I guess along with that is the idea that, you know, kids really need to be learners now, right? That it's not just about having access to the information and the teachers and whatever else, but that they have to have those kinds of skills and literacies and dispositions to make sense of that access. So I'm sure that that's a big part of your push to provide access and get technology into your schools. Do you see that as something that is kind of a separate kind of literacy instruction, or is it something that's ubiquitous throughout the school district, or how do you see that kind of playing out, that idea that kids developing as learners as much, if maybe not even more, as they're developing, being learned.
I think it's a separate literacy, honestly, and I say that because I've talked about my nephew when I first started talking about him. He was 8 and making puppets. Now he's extended his knowledge base is insane. YouTube is like his greatest teacher. It is, if he wants to know, right now he's making Star Wars characters out of yarn, and it looks like he bought those suckers at the store, but he was making them because his teacher in their class, they were studying propaganda. And in one class, they were talking about commercialization and selling a product and what that looks like, and the influence of media on their purchasing, and interesting conversations that they're having. So the challenge was to create something and convince their other classmates that to buy it. So out of his brain, he's like, I'm gonna make these yarn Star Wars characters. So he started making them. My sister FaceTimed me yesterday, and he's setting up at home. Now, mind you, the less the assignment was given, I don't know, maybe a few days ago, there were no parameters with what they needed to do with the assignment. But in his mind, he was like, well, I need to make a commercial. I need to make an ad for this. So I'm going to make a stop motion video. So he
That's
sets
great.
up a background in the house with greenery. He takes a wooden crate, makes a stand for his iPad because he doesn't have one. Vic puts like an old calculus textbook of mine and a calendar to hold the camera, the iPad in exact location, and starts making his movie. And my sister, of course, is in shock and disbelief. And I'm on the other end of FaceTime going, are you kidding me? Like, what? Like, this is not even his assignment. He's doing it because he's just so passionate about it. But these are things that he's learned over time from watching other people, or from interacting with YouTubers or whatever the case may be. So I think that giving the kids technology is one thing, but the difference that he has versus a kid who just got an iPad from school is I didn't put any filters on that iPad to block out the world from him. We teach him how to interact with the world. What do you do with content that is probably inappropriate for you? I mean, what happens when you encounter that? And he has. So what do you, and then at the same time, he also has at his fingertips whatever tools that he needs to continue to learn and be create and explore that, and it's not a hindrance. So given the kids, again, the technology is one piece, but if they don't know that I can take this and I can run with it and I can connect with others and learn beyond what my teacher has said for me to learn, then it's just going to be a digital, device with their textbook downloaded to it, if that makes sense.
It does, and I think that that's a great story to end our conversation on. Listener friends, I really want to thank you for your time and continued success in the work that you're doing to change your school district. It's exciting times and challenging times at the same time, but wish you a lot of success.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Modern Learners Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. And don't forget, if you want to continue the conversation, just head on over to our private Modern Learners Facebook group or to modernlearners.com for more information about teaching and learning in a rapidly changing world. We'll see you again next time.